Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Comic Source. I'm your host, Jace.
And I'm Nick.
And this is going to be a special, sort of a DC catch-up episode. As you're hearing this, Future State has started. And so you probably are wondering, well, is there something I need to know to understand Future State? What's involved? How can I, you know, get caught up and know that I'm reading the things that I need to read so that I won't be lost, so to speak. So I thought I would invite Nick on. He hasn't been following DC stuff, DC continuity or storylines or what have you for a while now. So I thought, well, he'd be the perfect person to come in and ask questions and kind of get caught up and understand where things are going with the DC universe. So we know Death Metal's been going on. That comes to an end this week as well. Actually, you know, as you're listening to this, it will have already dropped. And it was sort of a mess when it started, and it kind of got better as it went along in terms of it was a little easier to follow. It wasn't just, okay, let's throw everything at the kitchen sink and see what sticks. And in the end, I'm not going to go so far as to say that it was, you know, a big event or a good event in terms of comparing it to things like Crisis on Infinite Earth or Infinite Crisis or Final Crisis, which seemed to all those events that I just named off were planned out like really well, you know, and it wasn't just this, we have all these crazy ideas and this is sort of Scott Snyder's last big event at DC, at least for the foreseeable future. So him and Capullo, hey, we just want to throw everything, every crazy idea we've ever had on there and see what sticks. And that was sort of what Metal was in a way. I thought Metal was kind of a messy event as well.
That's the first part, right? I read the first part, like Dark Knights was, Metal or something. Where like
That was the one from like 2 years Batmans. Ago.
Yeah.
And
I didn't like that very much either.
Yeah, because it was hard to follow. It was such a big story. And instead of, you know, giving it the room, and I get why they do this, instead of giving it the room to breathe that they did, they tried to shove it all into, you know, 7 issues, and it just makes it tough. Because again, I understand why you're doing that. If you take too long for an event, you've got the rest of the books that are coming out, and it sort of loses its potency. You know, the rest of the universe is continuing to evolve, and this is just something that's kind of inherently a problem with shared comic book universes where you've got different creators. You don't have really tight editorial control, and they're wanting to tell their stories, but everything is supposed to match up. How can Superman be in space in this one, and over here he's in, you know, on Earth or in Metropolis or whatever? It's just a problem. And the thing is, if you have really tight editorial control, then you don't even necessarily have creators that want to go and work there because they want to tell the stories that they want to tell. So again, it's something that's inherently a problem. But for whatever reason, and Scott Snyder had to work really hard to even get Metal approved at DC editorial wise. Like they weren't even sure it was going to work. Nobody thought it would sell. And in a way, the fact that it did sell so well and Snyder and Capullo have such a dedicated fan base, it kind of worked against DC a little bit in a way. Because of the success of that, that's how they got Death Metal, which is in a way even messier. Now you're talking about the fact that you took the DC universe in Death Metal, the Death Metal story. And again, this goes from starts in Metal. Actually, you could even go further. It starts in Snyder and Capullo's Batman run with the, you know, the Metal that was there that resurrected the Joker and Bruce Wayne.
After Endgame.
Which then, you know, Bruce came back and we no longer had the Batman armor with the bunny ears that Jim Gordon was wearing.
Gordon got to retire.
Gordon got to actually retire. So, I mean, that's where it started. That was one of the Metals, you know, and then from there you went to DC, you know, DC Metal, Dark Knight's Metal. And you brought up the multiverse, which what's that?
I think I read, those are the two miniseries I think I read.
Yeah. You had like the Founding and the Forge.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that led into the Metal event. And during the Metal event, again, real broad strokes, during the Metal event, in order to stop the Dark Multiverse God, Barbados, or whatever his name was, from ascending to our universe and devouring it and having only the dark multiverse being left, you had the Justice League One, they were able to stop that, but it cracked the source wall. And the source wall in the DC universe supposedly is this wall that surrounds our universe, and it's constantly expanding, and it protects us from all the stuff out there. So the way that Scott Snyder described it when he was talking about Justice League, his Justice League run, is imagine the DC universe as a fishbowl. And now that the source wall is broken, it's like taking that fishbowl and dumping the water and the fish from that fishbowl into the ocean, right? That's how much you're expanding and bringing in all these other parts of, I guess you would call it the Omniverse now. So I mentioned Scott Snyder's Justice League. So with the events of what happened in Metal, now you move to Snyder's Justice League in terms of, okay, what's next in this epic story that he's telling? And that was told in the pages of Justice League. And even though they had defeated the Bat God from the Dark Multiverse, they did not defeat the Batman Who Laughs. So in Metal, there were all these different amalgamations of Batman. You had a Batman Wonder Woman, a Batman Doomsday, a Batman Green Lantern, a Batman
Aquaman.
What's that?
Wasn't that the female one? Was the Aquaman?
The Aquaman one, yeah. I think she was called, I was going to say The Deep, but no, that's from The Boys. The Drowned. The Drowned is what she was called. Yeah, you had the Batman Flash, which for some reason people really loved that one.
He looked cool, but.
Well, and also he's rumored, he's called the Red Death, and he's rumored to be in the Flash movie. So, of course, his, you know, whenever there's a rumor these days that one of these characters is going to appear in a movie, their comic prices shoot up, which makes no sense to me. I mean, I understand why it happens, but the fact of the matter is that comic book movies are so ubiquitous now that it kind of doesn't matter anymore. You know what I mean? Like when comic books were movies were more rare and you had somebody show up, then yeah, you would see the increased demand. Like, oh, but I mean, the comic book movies now are so commonplace. People, not even everybody goes to see them. People don't necessarily care anymore.
Well, and like they introduce so many characters these days, especially in Marvel. Like they're introducing like, I think, four characters that are unrelated to WandaVision and in WandaVision.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like we know that, you know, present company excluded, that for the most part, watching TV shows and movies doesn't drive sales. It doesn't suck people in. And the whole reason that these comics, if a character is going to show up in a movie or TV show, it's all the speculators that are speculating, oh, maybe this character is going to hit big. People will want to actually go and watch it. But I mean, The Walking Dead is a perfect example, right? Like when that show hit on AMC, the prices for issues and the big thing was trades. Like trade sales went through the roof, right? People wanted to even read the comic.
The giant ones. I bought those for a friend.
Right. But now, do people care? No. I would argue it's the same thing with the back issues when you're talking about. Like, I guarantee you that the Batman Flash amalgamation, the Red Death, is not going to be so important to the Flash movie that demand that is there right now. I think it's selling for like $30 or $40. Dang. After the Flash movie comes out, you'll be able to get it for, it won't go back to what it was pre-Flash movie because it just won't, but it'd probably be like $10. So anyway, not to get off on too far of a tangent here. So even though Barbados died or was defeated in Metal, you had the Batman Who Laughs, which is the amalgamation of the Joker and Batman, who I think is a terrible character, incredibly just awful and on all kinds of levels. Even people I know that are big Batman fans and big Joker fans don't like this character. But there also was a big segment of the population that loved him. His first appearance is worth a lot, and I don't see that going down ever. But anyway, that's what happened. He was the one that came out of it, right? So he was the true villain of that Metal series, if you want to think of it that way. So he was in the pages of Justice League along with this totality, which is sort of this idea of what has created the DC multiverse, sort of, right? So we found out that, and again, this is all in the Justice League run by Scott Snyder, and it's actually
That's when it split maybe don't off, right?
Think of it. Yeah, well, I mean,
like the first few issues, wasn't there like a miniseries and then it turned into Dark and Odyssey, and or is that different?
No. So it was supposed to be Justice League Dark, Justice League Odyssey, and Justice League were all supposed to start at the same time and be kind of tied in. But then there were issues editorially with Dark, I mean with Odyssey, and it launched later and it didn't even really tie in, but Dark tied in a little bit. But in order to just for our purposes, all we really need to talk about is the main title of Justice League. And so basically what we found out, because again, this run, although some people like it, some people don't. I mean, it's Snyder and there are issues with it and pacing and stuff. He has so many big ideas that oftentimes the books don't have enough real estate to get across the ideas, especially if you don't have a good grasp on the DC universe. But what it did was it did talk a lot about the origins of the DC universe. And so we learned that basically all these different multiverses in the DC universe are created and then destroyed, and they're constantly being created and destroyed. Like, one universe follows another, follows another, follows another. And the mother of our universe is a creature or a being called Perpetua. And what her job is to create the universe and the you know, beings that exist within it. And then she herself is supposed to die. And a new version of her, a new version, you know, matriarch of the universe or creator of the next universe will be birthed in time to, you know, finish off this universe as it reaches heat death or whatever and create the next one. But Perpetua didn't want that. So she created the universe and created three protectors for the universe. Those being the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor. So we got their origins. This being the Anti-Monitor from Crisis on Infinite Earths, and also another being called the World Forger, who's the one who is basically creating all the different worlds of this universe or this multiverse, right? So we have this multiverse, and he's constantly creating new worlds to exist, Earth 52, Earth 47, yeah. Blah, 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 right? Different shards of this multiverse is what the World Forger does.
So when they're supposed to erase it, does it erase every...
Yeah, it's supposed to erase everything.
And then everything resets and they create new mirror universe. Not mirror, you know what I mean? I've been watching Star Trek, but
yeah.
You
know. Yeah, it's everything is supposed to die and be reborn. And each of the multiverses within the omniverse is supposed to have a Perpetua-like person to create it. So that's supposedly, but Perpetua, she was holding on to things that she didn't want to hold on to. Because basically, the three people that she created, I mentioned the World Forger, his job was to create new shards within this multiverse. And the Monitor was supposed to monitor things and make sure things were proceeding, you know, time and everything was going along the way it was supposed to and fix any glitches. And the Anti-Monitor was supposed to basically keep other multiverses from the omniverse from bleeding into ours, supposed to like basically patrol the perimeter and keep anything bad from happening. That was the Anti-Monitor's job. So these higher beings, the ones that are responsible for the constant resetting of the omniverse, like all the different multiverses, mm-hmm. they're the ones that basically create the Perpetuas that in turn create these multiverses. They got wind of what Perpetua was doing, how she was holding on to power. She wasn't letting herself die because her three sons like told on her basically, hey, she won't give up. She won't die. She's not doing what she's supposed to be doing. So those beings came down to our multiverse and they got Perpetua and they imprisoned her in the source wall. Well, first they created the source wall mm-hmm. and then they imprisoned her in it. So the story, as Scott Snyder tells it, is now our multiverse had that fishbowl put around it, right? Had that source wall put around it mm-hmm. with Perpetua basically imprisoned in it. Okay, but now what is the Anti-Monitor going to do? You just took away his job, right? Like his mm-hmm. his job was to patrol the perimeter and make sure nothing from other multiverses entered our multiverse, but now you just put up a fence. So supposedly, according to Scott Snyder, this is why the Anti-Monitor decided to have a Crisis on Infinite Earths and destroy the multiverse and have only one Earth, because then now the Monitor doesn't have anything to do either. If you take away my job, I'm taking away his job. You know, like he's mad at his brother.
Yeah, sibling rivalries.
His brother still has a reason to exist. So I know it's big stuff and it's cool ideas when you think about it. So that's basically what the Source Wall is, right? And why it happened. And Perpetua was in prison. Well, then, like I said, the end of the metal event, and the Source Wall gets broken with what Batman had to do in order to defeat the Bat God Barbados. And so that totality, which technically was a piece of the Source Wall, because the Source Wall technically is supposed to exist in all times and all, you know, it exists at the beginning of time, at the end of time, whatever, it's kind of outside of time. So a piece of that flies off, it impacts Earth, and it has all the knowledge because it's a piece of the Source Wall. It contains all this knowledge within it about Perpetua, about the different monitors, the World Forger, you know, all this history is contained within the knowledge of that little piece of fragment. And that supposedly, and again, these are cool ideas that he's retconning in here. Supposedly that meteorite, it landed at all these different times because it's in all times.
Yeah. Like,
so it landed way far in the past, and it's what gave Vandal Savage his ability, which Vandal Savage, if you don't know, he was a caveman way back in the day. And he was exposed to the radiation from this meteorite and became like immortal and super intelligent. And he's been a bad guy, and he's fought all kinds of different DC heroes through time. So, and then eventually a piece of that totality was passed down through the years. And eventually Lionel Luthor, Lex Luthor's father, got it. And he was the one that was able to sort of crack the code, if you will. But he kind of overstepped his bounds and pissed off some of the wrong people and basically had his memory erased and he didn't remember. And so then eventually Lex Luthor gets it, and then he learns about all this, and then he wants to use Perpetua for his own nefarious purposes. And that's where you got the Justice versus Doom, because you had the, you know, the Justice League versus the Legion of Doom. And so that's where all that came from. Plus you had the Batman Who Laughs Last, who still existed in our reality, having come up from the dark multiverse. And he had his own ideas about how he was going to, you know, use all these events to basically make himself more powerful. So that's what's going on at DC, right? And in the background and in the real world, let's talk about, you know, a little bit about DC editorial. So for years, DC has had these issues where they've tried to fix things because of their legacy type of universe, you know, where you have Hal Jordan Green Lantern replacing Alan Scott Green Lantern, you have Barry Allen Flash replacing Jay Garrick Flash, Golden Age, Silver Age, whatever, and they're trying to make it make all make sense. And the whole reason they did Crisis on Infinite Earths the first time was to be, try to lower the barrier of entry, because people would say, I can't read DC Comics, I got to go back and read 50 years of history, it's too confusing to know what's going on. And that's really not the case. You just dive in. I'm just telling you, man, just dive in where you're going to dive in, read what you want to read, and you'll figure it out.
Hopefully I mean, that's what you hit the beginning of a new arc. Cause sometimes it's hard to jump in and be like, oh, I'm midway through an arc, but
but you know, when I started reading,
jump in and you can learn stuff with Wikipedia. And
yeah, exactly. And when I started reading,
start at the beginning,
but when I started reading, there weren't even really arcs. It was more a continuing, like a soap opera, you know? And then with the advent of trade paperbacks and stuff, now everything is written in like 5 or 6 story arcs. But I remember when that first started happening, when they first started having, you know, part one of four within the series, it was so cool because you got different trade dress on the cover and things like that. It was like, So anyway, just dive in. But anyway, that's what DC did. That's what Crisis on Infinite Earth was. It was try to clean everything up, but they didn't go whole hog on it, you know, and Marv Wolfman laments this to, you know, they should have just started everything over at number one. There's even talk of changing the name of DC Comics to Action Comics or something else like that. It fixed some things, but it caused other problems. And then a couple of years later, they had to do another big event, which was Zero Hour. Hey, let's do another event. Plus, the other aspect of this is you have Crisis on Infinite Earths. Over at Marvel, you had Marvel Superhero Secret Wars. They both sold like gangbusters. So, you know, any company that's, you know, they see money on the table, they're going to go, they're going to try to grab it. Right. Exactly. So then they, let's do Zero Hour and we clean up a few more things. And that works for a while. But again, it goes back to what I was talking about earlier with the problem with these shared universes. The inherent problem is you have all these different people that want to tell the stories they want to tell with the characters they want to tell. And then they tell a certain story. And then the next writer comes on and tells something that completely contradicts that, you know, these characters, they're living and breathing ideas, and eventually things just don't reconcile. It just doesn't make sense. Well, how could Bruce only be, because that's the other part of it, right? How could these characters only be 30 and 40 years old when they've existed for 80 years, right? And they never get older.
Well, and you see the problem with that when Marvel did Spider-Man, you know, getting him, having him get married and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that really changed the dynamic of obviously the Spider-Man comic, which starts with him as a kid and a college student and stuff. And now he's like,
And then when
married,
they
not married, like,
And then Joe Quesada comes along and wants to get rid of that because it, you know, wants to sort of de-age Spider-Man. Then fans that love that aspect of it are revolting. But I get it. You know, you want characters to grow and evolve. But again,
not so much that you can't recognize them. That's like the real fanboy dilemma where it's like Last Jedi. It's like Luke changed too much. He evolved, but he changed too much. You know, familiar, but different. I don't know if that's correct.
No, but I mean, yeah, you're making a lot of sense. So anyway, so that's where we are with the DC universe. And then editorial wise, you had, because after Zero Hour, it fixed some things, but then eventually other cracks start to show and you do another crisis. Oh, let's do Infinite Crisis. And now it's a thing right now. Now you can start calling big DC events crises. And then eventually you got Avenger, final
with Marvel. It's wars with DC. It's crisis.
Right. And you end up with Final Crisis, which is not really the Final Crisis because you know you're going to have more. So eventually what happens is DC says, well, you know what? We're going to do what we maybe should have done all along with the Crisis on Infinite Earths. And we really are going to wipe everything away. And we're going to start everything over with a number one issue. And that's what New 52 was.
2011, when I started reading comic books.
But the problem is, what DC ended up doing is they kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater. And I heard Jim Lee and Dan Didio both admit that it was a mistake, that they got rid of a lot of the relationships and the legacy feel of DC Comics, which is what made DC Comics special and what the fans really loved about it. You know, because not only did you erase Black Canary and Green Arrow and Superman and Lois and all these marriages, you didn't have, by trying to condense everything down to, because the New 52 supposedly started 5 years after Superman showed up for the first time. And so it doesn't make sense. So what about the World War II characters? And what about this? And what about that? It just, they didn't think it out well enough. Oh. And although the first
few issues of Batman, there's a scene where it's like not even 30-year-old Bruce and all of his Bat family is there. And it's like, if you've been Batman for 5 years, how do you have like five Robins?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Including a son.
It doesn't make sense. And some of the fans were like, well, now why have I been bothering to read all this time? The stories that I read, quote unquote, don't matter. So anyway, it caused some problems. And like from a real world aspect, the problem was that when they got ready to roll this out, they meticulously planned out like the first six issues of each, you know, the first 6 months of each series. And everything, there was nothing that really contradicted, and they had a real close, tie and oversight on it, and they tied everything out really well. But then after you can't keep up that level of commitment. It's just too much manpower, because you've got to keep that goes back to the monthly schedule and the difficulty in keeping a shared universe going. Because they still had regular books coming out, and a lot of the people that were working on the New 52 stuff weren't working on the regular books, so they could just concentrate on getting their stuff right. Mm-hmm. But now, once you've burned through that 6 month backlog, and now you're working on new stuff, nobody has time to be looking at, oh, you're doing this over here. Well, that's contradicting this over here, and it's contradicting what came before and what was erased. And all of a sudden, before you know it, things are messy again, right? And things don't make sense. And like you mentioned, how could he have five Robins? He's only been Batman for 5 years.
Or like I felt it was either Batman or Detective really didn't reset at all, because he'd refer to
Bane
and
there were
broken
couple.
By Bane already.
Yeah, like, there were
this
a couple.
This has happened.
Yeah, there were a couple of titles that were selling really well from big name creators that they didn't want to mess with them. So Green Lantern by Geoff Johns, mm-hmm. there was no change. You wouldn't even know an event happened. And Batman by Morrison was the other one that you wouldn't really. But it didn't continue in Batman or Detective. It continued in Batman and Robin was, I think, what he. So, yeah, there were a couple things that you wouldn't really. So fast forward a few more years, DC does another. And this is what they call it, like a soft reboot, where they just sort of massage things. And that's what Rebirth was.
Oh, Rebirth.
Yeah, let's bring back.
Convergence was at the end of New 52, right? That was weird.
Convergence? No, Convergence happened between the two. Convergence was an event.
That was to try to do a reset, but
it wasn't. Well, that was when DC was moving their offices from New York City to Burbank, and so basically, they got a bunch of creators to create a story that they worked on for a few months, and then when everybody was moving, they released those. Like Convergence was already done. Like it was all 2-issue miniseries and a Convergence bookend series. So 2 issues of that. And they put those out for 2 months while everybody moved and the editorial offices got up and running again. So it was basically like a bridge to allow them to move and not have any disruption in the titles. But in terms of like an event or what sort of effect it had on the universe, it was very minimal. I think the biggest effect that came out of it was the birth of John Kent in Dan Jurgens' Superman Convergence. So you fast forward to Rebirth, and that's where DC really said, well, we made a mistake getting rid of some of this legacy, so we want to bring that feel back. And it was very well received. Again, you know, Geoff Johns, who seems to have the real pulse of the DC fanboy, bringing Wally West back. And the reason you say it's a soft reboot is because it didn't just say, okay, some crazy event happened and you snap your fingers and things just changed. They just kind of changed organically. And it was the beginning of this idea that, okay, continuity is going to be a little more fluid at DC. So then you fast forward to January 2020, and or even before that, actually, I would say October 2019, there was the first inklings that we saw at New York Comic Con in a panel that Dan Didio did. There were some slides that went up on the screen that talked about these 5 different timelines, these 5 different generations, or 5G, as it came to be known, where we're currently in, like, the current DC universe at that time was considered the 4th generation. And if you go back, you know, you can divide it up over time. You know, here's the Golden Age, here's the Silver Age, here's the Copper Age, and then here's the Modern Age, which is 4G. And then the idea was there was going to be this 5th generation. And from everything we heard, we were going to get another generation of heroes. And then the rumor started, okay, John Kent is going to replace Kal-El as Superman, and you're going to have a new Flash, a new Wonder Woman, a new Green Lantern, and what have you. And people started speculating on, new Batman's going to be Luke Fox, and it's going to be Batwing from like number 19 or number 20, whichever issue. And that shot up in price and this and that. And supposedly that's what was going to happen, right? We all know that Dan Didio, even though he's a publisher, was much more of an editor in chief, very involved with the creative process and kind of, you know, real hands-on. And then for whatever reason, now keep in mind, all during this time, since the AT&T merger with Warner Brothers went through, Dan now has a new boss, someone who has gone on record as saying, I don't like comic books, I don't like imprints. At this time, you've got DC Zoom, DC Inc., Young Animal, Vertigo, the regular DC Universe, Black Label. You've got all these imprints, right? And you've got this person who's in charge of DC who doesn't like imprints. And so we don't know the exact reasons, never been made public, of why Dan Didio got fired. He got fired in January of 2020. And so now you've had all these creators that were working on this 5G event that was supposed to be coming. And supposedly it was not going to have that much to do with what was going on with Dark Knight's metal, or death metal is what I should say. Yeah. Dark Knight's death metal. But we were going to get this was going to be more of a hard reboot, where we were going to get a new status quo and new heroes moving forward in the DC universe. Right. And you had creators working on it, all this product and work that they were doing, that they were being paid for, that was supposed to come out. And then Didio gets fired, and we hear, okay, because they're hearing a lot of backlash from fans. Hey, you know, we don't want these characters to be replaced. And this is the thing, like, at the end of the day, Clark Kent's going to come back and be Superman.
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne's going to come back and be Batman. These are billion-dollar properties. They're not going to make...
But he came back.
Yeah, they're not going to make changes.
Before New 52, didn't he die and had... Drake took over, I think, first, and then
I don't remember. Doesn't matter.
Now it doesn't matter.
It's always going to come back. I mean, these characters are worth too much money. They're always going to come back to the status quo. But anyway, that all went out the window. So then all of a sudden, DC's like, okay, now what are we going to do? And at that point, it seems like death metal became a little more important. You know, DC editorial or what have you goes to Scott Snyder and says, okay, well, so now we're not having this event, which the event that was going to happen was going to be called Generations, which they're still bringing out this Generations Shattered series, right?
Okay. Like Marvel did Generations right before they did
Well, so there's Marvel. Two. Yeah, there's.
I can't remember what they called the last Marvel.
Well, there's the two
books where you're like, oh, it's both Wolverines. And yeah.
Yeah. So basically, they were even going to release it on New Comic Book Day. You were going to have a special called Generation One, and then you're going to have a Generation Two, Generation One, Age of Mysteries. And like I said, a New Comic Book Day special. So you were going to have over a period of 5 months. So May, June, July, August, September, you were going to have these five generation books that were going to kind of explain the generations. And then eventually, you know, it was going to be this event that leads into, okay, what comes next? What's this 5G basically, where you had supposedly all this talent, this new talent. DC was going to not just have new characters as, you know, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, what have you, but you're going to get this influx of talent into the DCU. But when 5G got thrown out with Didio leaving, now all of a sudden, well, and COVID hit, that did accelerate some of this. So New Comic Book Day got canceled. This the 5G specials all got canceled. And now DC is trying to figure out, okay, well, now what? Now what comes next? We already had all these ideas for 5G, and apparently they liked a lot of them. So now we get to the crux of it. So what happens, right? So let's talk about the generations things first. So you had this 5G event. So we need to separate that. So the 5G event, we'll just call generations for lack of, you know, maybe because I love Star Trek and that's the first Next Generation movie. So anyway, you have the generation.
And Shatner.
Yeah, exactly. What was it called? The Time Ribbon?
I think so.
Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah.
Yeah, Malcolm McDowell. He's a great actor. I love Malcolm McDowell.
I like that. I have a soft spot for that Star Trek
movie. Yeah, it's not the best one.
He just comes in and Shatner's like cooking bacon or something.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, you have the Generations event, and then you have 5G. So 5G, the ideas of it, is actually what's becoming Future State. And this Generations thing has been distilled down into just a couple of one-shots. Generation Shattered, which is out this week as we're talking about this, as it's out tomorrow, as you're listening to it, it's already out. And then we have another one next month called Generations Forged, I think it's called. It's the second one. I'm trying to find it here. Yeah, Generations Forged. Is in February. So basically what this is, so AT&T had paid for this Generation 1, Generation 2 through Generation 5, these one shots that were going to be this event, and they'd already paid and some of the work had already been done. So AT&T, penny pinchers as they are, says, well, why not use this? So let's use this. And so they've repurposed it into this, I won't even call it an event now, because Generation Shattered and Generation Forged, I mean, it's two issues. But the thing is, and I've already read Generation Shattered, when you look at it, it very much has a feel of being an event. It has that tight feel of a legitimate DC event, where I'm very reminiscent of Crisis, where there's you know, this whiteness, they call it the goneness, quote unquote goneness, because everything that is touched by this wave of nothingness or goneness, it just disappears. It ceases to exist. So it's very reminiscent of Crisis and the antimatter wave that came through and erased everything. But it's only being done in two issues, and it's not necessarily tying into anything that else that's coming out these 2 months, because all the regular DC Universe books are Future State. So what does that mean for this? Nobody knows at this point. Nobody knows, except we know that coming out of Future State in March, DC is having what's called Infinite Frontier. That's their new sort of publishing initiative, where hey, some of the things from Future State you may see. And again, Future State, as the name implies, is happening in the future. But what we're going to see in Infinite Frontier is some of the seeds planted for some of those things happening there. So in a way, DC Generations is almost the companion soft reboot piece that's explaining the differences that you're seeing in where the DC universe was at the end of December versus where the DC universe is going to be at the beginning of March. And you have the future state of this glimpse ahead for 2 months of possible futures that could happen. Right now, to pull back in the DC metal part of this, because it's not convoluted enough. What you have in DC metal toward the end, and again, as you listen to this, it's already come out, but I don't want to spoil it too much because it's only been out for, you know, less than a week. But basically what happens in the last half of DC Dark Metal 7 or Death Metal 7 is the way the story is resolved in such a way that now everything matters. So what you've had over time in the DC universe, according to Perpetua and the World Forger and all this, every time something has changed, it's been because Perpetua or the World Forger or one of the monitors or whoever has basically taken the entirety of the DC multiverse and had to tweak things to keep it going, to keep it alive, to keep it from being destroyed. Right.
Flash, that's the whole idea of it. That's kind of all their responsibility, like a New 52 and.
Right. Exactly.
Tweaking stuff to save something. They tweak something, it caused this, and they tweaked it back a little bit and it's rebirth, right? Or.
Yes. Exactly.
Wasn't Dr. Manhattan involved at some point? Wasn't that what like the first Rebirth
book that was about? What Rebirth said was Dr. Manhattan was sort of responsible for all this. But now that part, and again, a lot of it's probably the fact that Geoff Johns, he doesn't have a title at DC anymore. You know, he left in the middle of last year when Diane Nelson officially, you know, Diane Nelson had gone on leave and then she officially left, and he was, Johns was kind of her favorite son. And when he left, then Johns left his chief creative officer role and just became a freelancer and, you know, was finishing off Doomsday Clock and was finishing off Shazam and what have you. So, you know, now he's got his own production company and he's completely freelance. And so, yeah, all that stuff has kind of been Dr. Manhattan stuff's kind of been forgotten.
Well, you did he mess with the universe? They're even more powerful than Dr. Manhattan. They used him to. I mean, the whole God in real life theory. We're like, they made Dr. Manhattan, so they used him as a tool.
Yeah, but he has. I mean, that very well could be, but they haven't mentioned it. And Dr. Manhattan was such an interesting take. But then you have the other people who, you know, don't like the fact that Watchmen stuff is being used, and it's, you know, Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons' creations are being mixed into the regular DCU. That's a whole nother conversation. I'm not going to get into
the prequel books.
Yeah, the prequel
first
books.
Issue of like Minutemen and stuff. And I'm this is not
Watchmen. Before Watchmen. Yeah.
Yeah, before Watchmen.
So that's been all. So that Dr. Manhattan's kind of been this forgotten part of it. And what you've had is, okay, all these different crises have been caused by what I was talking about with this crisis energy and this and that. And so the heroes, while they're fighting in this death metal event, become aware of how many times reality has kind of been reset. And all these different crises, and you know, they're remembering things like, I used to be, you know, with this person, or I used to do this, or I used to do that, or I remember when I couldn't walk, or you know, whatever it is, they become aware of it. Like all these different versions, all the different versions of the Titans.
I remember when I couldn't walk, and now I can be Batgirl again.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's been a thing. Like, she always knew she couldn't walk or whatever. It's not a good example, but if you look at all the different.
I didn't know why she was suddenly walking. I never actually read that comic.
Yeah, she got like this, she got this implant, this chip implanted in her spine that supposedly, but anyway.
Okay. So that is very different. That's just the only example I can think of.
Right. But a good example is there's been all these different versions of Teen Titans, and now they're and they actually know each other existed and that kind of thing. So that's more of a good example. So now they're all aware of it. And so the way that Death Metal resolves in such a way that Didio's getting his wish, even though he's not there anymore, everything happened. Everything counts. Well, how can that be when this story may 100% contradict this story? Well, it seems like DC's telling us, just don't think about it too hard. Like, everything matters. Everything happened. We can't necessarily match it all up and say, here's this nice, neat timeline. So just think of it as, well, it happened in a bubble and it didn't really affect, you know, think of it as these little offshoots or pocket universes that happen within the regular DC multiverse. Just don't
quote Deadpool. That's just lazy writing. And well, it's writing in Tenet. Tenet has a line where it's like, don't think about it so much. And you're like, okay,
well, so
I will think about it.
While I agree with you to some extent that it is lazy writing.
Why is it a joke more than anything else?
What I would say to anybody who thinks that, well, because I there are going to be hardcore DC fans that say, no, DC, don't do this. Keep tight continuity. Keep at this point, you know, we're coming up on like, what, 90 years of DC Comics. Mm-hmm. At this point, it's just not possible. There isn't. It would be so impossible to write a story that would reconcile all these different changes and have a timeline that makes sense.
And people
wouldn't have Bruce Wayne as Batman. Yeah. You wouldn't have Superman as or Kal-El, Clark Kent. I mean, I guess you'd still have him as Superman, but Lois Lane would be dead. Jimmy Olsen, you know, like it's gone too long. You can't, and there's been too many stories and there's too much history. You can't reconcile it all. So while in a way it's lazy writing, they don't really have a choice at this point.
Yeah, I agree.
And the other thing I think they're banking on is the fact that now you can tell people, well, whatever your favorite story is of any particular character, it happened and it counts and it matters. And some people are gonna like that. So that's what happens at the end of Death Metal. Everything counts. And now we're going to get this new Infinite Frontier, where supposedly the Infinite Frontier is the fact that, okay, now the whole idea of the multiverse is back, you know, because we went from having supposedly tons of different worlds before Crisis on Infinite Earths. And then after Crisis on Infinite, there was just one Earth. And then you had the events of Infinite Crisis, and there were only 52 Earths. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we had the whole map that Grant Morrison created in his Multiversity series. And now we're back to having what's called an Omniverse. Remember that source wall is gone now. So there's nothing to say that we're not mixed in with all these other omniverses, and you can tell any story you want to tell. And from the perspective of AT&T and the higher ups, they want less continuity, because then you remove that barrier to entry that people are worried about. And they're like, stop worrying so much about continuity, just tell good stories so people will buy them and we will make money. And I don't know what it is about the people at AT&T that think that somehow Warner Brothers, regardless of good decisions, bad decisions, DC Comics, what have you, hey, let's release all 14 movies streaming, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what in the recent history or in the complete history of Warner Brothers as a studio and an entertainment entity makes you think that it can earn $155 billion. The only thing I can think is that you're looking across the street at Marvel, who kind of captured lightning in a bottle. But I think even there, they've already peaked and they won't be seeing the same kind of returns. Yeah.
You'll never have an end game again. They'll make a lot of money, but they'll never.
Yeah, it's just not going to, because I think people. I think people are kind of tired. I think there's a section of the population that's tired of superhero movies and they want to move on to something else.
I think 2020 helped a little bit, though.
Yeah, possibly.
Like, I mean, we didn't even need more Marvel.
We didn't even get an MCU movie this year. But regardless of that, AT&T.
We're in the future now.
Yeah, exactly. AT&T made the incredibly stupid decision to buy DirecTV for, you know, whatever amount, some ridiculous $90 billion or whatever it was, some stupid amount of money. And now AT&T is $155 billion in debt. And somehow all these changes they're making at Warner Brothers seem to be only financially motivated to somehow dig themselves out of this hole. And I keep going back to who at AT&T thinks that Warner Brothers as an entity can generate $155 billion to pull you out of this hole, unless you're looking across the street, like I said, at Disney and the MCU and thinking, yeah, if we can just get these movies right, well, then concentrate on the movies. I don't understand the thought of let's pinch pennies all the way down at the editorial level at DC Comics, because that savings is going to translate to us becoming more profitable. I mean, I said it at the very beginning when AT&T bought Warner Brothers. I said, this is the beginning of the end. And now we're finally, you know, 3 years later, whatever, we're seeing the fallout of that. So they want less continuity. They want to push these characters more international. And this is their way to do it, right? To take these all these different disparate elements and throw them at the wall and just say it all matters, it all counts. Don't think about it too hard, right? So to pull it all the way back to future state, mm-hmm. now that we've kind of talked through sort of the entire multiversal history of DC here and how we get to Infinite Frontier, which we won't really know exactly how Infinite Frontier feels in terms of what it is as a universe and how it all works together, probably till I'd say like June-ish, you know, after we've had 3 or 4 months of this and see how it all goes. We know the solicitations for March. Obviously, I did a podcast with some buddies where we broke it down for 3 hours, went title by title for future state and talked about what to expect. But it's a small amount of titles. You know, we're only talking like 20 titles. And we know there's other titles to come that have been announced that weren't in the March solicits, like Wonder Girl and Green Lantern. So those are still coming. So it's going to be a while before we know. Okay, what is this? What is the practical consequence? What is the practical feel of the universe now that this we've gone to this continuity light sort of model? And the other thing that we've seen is that DC's been selling a lot more anthologies, and in future state there are a few anthologies or books that either it's an anthology where, hey, you've got 4 or 5 8-page stories or 10-page stories or what have you, and then you've got some where you've got 2 stories that are maybe 20 pages, others it's like a main story of like, you know, 20 pages and then a backup of 10 pages. Mm-hmm. So they're trying a bunch of different models to kind of see what sticks. And we don't know, you know, how we're going to get there. But what we do know is we mentioned 5G before. Well, a lot of that, a lot of those ideas DC liked, and a lot of that work had been done already. So again, going back to AT&T pinching pennies, they're not going to say, well, we don't want to use this because we're not doing 5G anymore. So they decided to come up with this idea of future state. So for 2 months, let's take those ideas and tweak them and, you know, push them into the future a little bit and say, hey, this is a possible future of the DC universe that could happen. And so now we're getting, for the most part, we're getting 2-issue series similar to Convergence, where you get 1 issue in January and 1 issue in March. Some of them, like Batman, Superman, are getting more than that. They're getting 4 issues. So you'll see them come out every 2 weeks. You'll get 2 issues in January and 2 issues in March.
And but basically, separate from the normal. Right.
So future
Batman
state
every week. It's not going to be Batman future state. It's I need to go get the mini, add Batman future state to my pull list.
No. Right? So there's future state, the Dark Detective, and there's future state. Books. There's future state, the next Batman. So for the month of January and for the month of February, there are no regular DC superhero comics.
I'm getting these comics already. If I get Batman and Detective.
Cool. Well, you'll have to check and see, because again, Batman, I mean, one, I guess if you get Batman,
and shops can get confused
if you sometimes. Get Batman and Detective, they're probably going to pull next Batman and Dark Detective for you. So next, the next Batman takes the place of the Batman title, the Dark Detective comic takes the place of Detective Comics. So think of it like that. So technically what you need to know in order to read future state supposedly is nothing. You don't need to know anything. Because this is an alternate future that may or may not come to pass. Some of these things may or may not happen. But I do think, because what we found out when we saw the March solicitations was, so a lot of those creators that were signed up to do 5G, which has now become 2 months of future state, mm-hmm. are the same creators that are going to be on the regular books going forward starting in March.
Oh, okay.
And that's where I have a little bit of a problem. Only because I've read the first 2 weeks of future state titles and I don't think the quality is there. And it's not that I don't want to see new creators, but when you get rid of 90% of your creators that have been there working on these characters for, you know, the last few years, and you swap out that much, it's not that it's bad quality, but the whole tone of the universe changes. Like normally if you bring in 1 or 2 at a time, they can kind of assimilate and see how things are done. Well, obviously with all the layoffs at DC, things are being done differently. And maybe that's a part of why the quality is not there, because, or maybe it's the fact that this isn't what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be 5G and now it's being repurposed. So these creators are having to, okay, well, here's what I was going to tell in my first arc of 5 or 6 issues. I'm now trying to condense down into 2 issues. Supposed to be in, you know, my first 5G arc, 5 issues now. It's future state. It's only 2 issues. I'm trying to shoehorn too much in. for whatever reason, I'm not real happy about the first 2 weeks of Future State. But, you know, to boil it down to the simplest thing, what do you need to know to read Future State? Apparently nothing, because again, these are just stories with these characters of possible futures. But I mean, when I read a few of them, I just felt like, well, this is kind of, and I know DC clearly, I know everything that's been going on at DC, and I'm reading it going, because again, you're telling it in the future with no context and it's not being done well. And I'm feel lost. Like, well, wait, what? And you're trying to pick up things in context, and what is the state of Gotham, and what is the state of Metropolis? What is the state of the DC universe overall? The art isn't particularly good. So I don't have a good feeling about Future State. And I kind of feel like, okay, wait, DC, you just told me that what you were doing in Death Metal was creating a universe in such a way that everything counts and everything matters and everything happened, and anything I read is it's good. Like, I should care about it because it happened. And then you turn around that same week that you released DC Death Metal, that same week you released a comic that says everything matters and here's how it all came to matter with the resolution of Death Metal. And you release these possible futures that may or may not happen for 2 months, and then we're going to go back to a different sort of status quo. Does that seem like a complete 180 to you?
Yeah, and at the same time, all this seems unnecessary to me as more of a casual comic fan, because I understand there's a multiverse, and you shouldn't have to. I don't know. I feel like Dark Knights or whatever, the metal, Death Metal, over explains it to a point where it's like, no, it's just a multiverse. Yeah, the story, who cares? Like, the multiverse. A little bit.
Yeah, and I would say as a casual... You have to
explain it more than it's just the multiverse. This has happened to Batman here. It hasn't here. Like,
yeah, and I would say as a Batman fan, I maybe pick up Batman, the Batman titles. I don't know that you'll like them. I thought one of them was okay. One of them was good. The first issue of one of them was good. The first issue of the other, not so good. You'll have to listen to our Future State Friday, next Friday, to hear about the first week. We're going to give you a full week and a half to read the books before we go into reviews that are kind of filled with spoilers. So we don't want to, as always, we don't want to spoil things for you. So you're listening to this on kind of the Future State Friday, what you need to know, which I've told you everything you need to know, more than you need to know. And then at the end of the day, what you really need to know to read Future State supposedly is nothing, because it doesn't technically tie into anything. But like I said, you are going to see concepts that exist in these Future State books. I'll give you one example because it's been in all the solicits. In Gotham City, there is sort of a new fascist police force. I wouldn't even call it a police force, but this new kind of entity that's in power in terms of sort of keeping the order in Gotham. It's called the Magistrate, and very topical in terms of, hey, we don't want any masks. We don't want vigilantes. You know, it's just very fascist. And it's, like I said, it's called the Magistrate, and it sort of rules Gotham with an iron fist in terms of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do and this and that. And it's kind of replaced the police, almost like an occupying army or an invading army. Who's taken over Gotham and sort of ruling it in a way, a police state, if you will, even though they're not. I don't want them to be confused. I don't want you to think Magistrate is like the new GCPD, because it's not. From what I can see, there doesn't even really exist a Gotham City Police Department anymore. But anyway, I think when we come back to the regular DC universe in March, you're going to start seeing, and we've already seen with Mayor Nakano, just recently elected in an issue of DC Comics, he ran on a platform of, hey, no masks, no more vigilantes. So you're going to start seeing the seeds of this possible future where the Magistrate is in Gotham City. You're going to see some of that in James Tynan's Batman run going forward once we get back to the regular DCU. So that's what I'm talking about, where these are possible futures that have ideas and concepts that editorial at DC apparently likes. And so when we shift back and we're back to present day, you're going to start seeing some of those ideas, some of the things that are hinted at, that, because like in the Teen Titans Future State, for example, they refer back to the school, the Teen Titans Academy. There's never been a Teen Titans Academy, but we know, based on the solicits for Teen Titans as it starts in March, that the Teen Titans are going to be establishing a school to train metahumans, basically. So we've seen future state Teen Titans where we see that the consequences and you know, some future events that deal with that school. Now we go back and we see the beginnings of the school. So it's going to be things like that, where if you read Future State, you're going to get glimpses of a possible future, but you're also getting clues to what happened in the past. And then we'll see those things happen in the present day of DC Universe going forward. But again, the biggest problem I have with it is just the quality, I feel like, is not there. And I think it's just because you've got such huge turnover that it's hard to keep a consistent tone. And maybe that's what DC wants. Maybe they want to throw the baby out with the bathwater again and get all these new fresh takes. And it is a good jumping on point. March Infinite Frontier will be a good jumping on point if you haven't been reading DC Comics and you want to get into it. Whether they're going to be worth jumping onto, it's too soon to say. I can't tell you that. But as far as Future State goes, it's going to be tough. Listen to the Future State episode, Future State Friday episodes. We'll go book by book. And if one sounds like it interests you, then yeah, by all means, jump on. And I don't want to sound like they're all terrible. There's a couple that I enjoyed, but for the most part, they're kind of average. Some are below average. There haven't been any where I've been like, oh my God, you have to be reading this. And the fact of the matter is there are so many good comics out there right now where I say, oh my God, you have to be reading this. Why would you want to waste money on a possible future DC books for Future State? So I don't know. After having all this catch up and all this talk, Nick, as a casual comic fan, I mean, does Future State sound like something you want to be into? Does
try it? I'll read it and talk about it with you. But I didn't know what I was expecting.
Does Infinite Frontier sound more to your liking? Like, hey, I'll have a chance to expand my DC reading and read more titles if it's a good jumping on point.
Yeah, I mean, mostly, it's not like I wouldn't run out and buy any more comics because of it, per se. Mostly because I'm only getting two comics right now because I'm unemployed. But I don't know. I don't really feel like it's necessary to have another DC jumping in on point. Like you said, just jump into it. A multiverse explanation that didn't even need to be said. One line could have fixed all of it.
And well, like I said, I don't think that this originally was how Death Note was going to go. I mean, I think a lot of it is how it was going to go, but I think Snyder probably tweaked it once they said, well, we're not going to do that generation event anymore where we have, you know, one shot generation one, generation two, all the way through generation five. We're not doing that. So we need your Death Metal to kind of explain why everything counts again. So that's why I'm kind of interested, like, once we get Generation Shattered and Generation Forged, is that just going to be kind of a standalone story? Will that actually lead into Infinite Frontier? Like, I don't know. The thing is, it was so nice after reading Death Metal and Death Metal kind of being all over the place, as much as it got, you know, there are enjoyable parts of it. And, you know, some of the one shots are great. The Superboy Prime one, Superboy Prime is one of my favorite characters. That was written by Scott Snyder and Geoff Johns. And this is just one of the best comics I've read this year. I absolutely loved it. So not all Death Metal was bad, but it was kind of scattered and all over the place. So then to go back and read something like Generation Shattered, which is an event where things are just a lot more cohesive. It was nice. I was like, wow, I really like this. I remember when events were good. Remember when they made sense instead of just, hey, let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. So kind of interesting. So anyway, that's what you need to know technically to read Future State. Nothing technically, but I think I've given you, you know, the sort of the real world explanation of how we got to where we are. And you definitely know as much about the DC current status of the DC universe as you can know, with Infinite Frontier coming in a couple months. And we're actually only about a week or 10 days away, as we're recording this, away from the solicitations for for April. So once the April solicitations come out, we'll know a little more. Hey, how many more books Are we going to see that Joelle Jones Wonder Girl book? Are we going to see the Jeffrey Thorne Green Lantern book, and what other titles that we might see? There is a school of thought that thinks that a lot of the things that we see that are outside of the superhero universe. So right now we have the American Vampire. I think it's 1979 series going on from Scott Snyder. We have Sweet Tooth Returns from Jeff Lemire. We're going to start seeing a lot of those type of series go away at DC. Mm. So who knows? We do know they want to cut their line. And they have, they really have. But how much will they re-expand it? Maybe it'll depend on sales. I don't know. There's no Aquaman title. There's no Green Arrow title. There's no Justice League Dark title. Justice League Dark is now going to be a 10-page backup in the Justice League book, which
interesting.
I really like Justice League Dark, and I want to read Justice League Dark, but I will not buy a Justice League book written by Brian Michael Bendis because his DC work has been abysmal, and I just won't.
There's not an Aquaman book because you think AT&T will want to be you think they'd have all the characters that have movies coming up would have books, especially one of the seven.
Yeah, well, it's very telling. Seven,
I like calling them that, even though that's technically the boys too. But the movies have featured seven once they add Green Lantern. I guess.
Well, it's very telling that if you look at the Suicide Squad book that's restarting in March, that all of a sudden the lineup is
The same as a movie like
Peacemaker. It's not 100%, but I couldn't tell you the last time Peacemaker appeared in a DC comic. But it's now he's
because of the movie and the, yeah. They're doing now a cool TV series too on HBO Max.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. And now he's like leading the Suicide Squad. So,
well, it's like when they did like the months following Avengers, the first Avengers, and that end credit scene. Suddenly, a character I'd never heard of up to that point, Thanos, was appearing in like every book, and you were like, "Huh."
Yep.
Like he was in Avengers Assemble. Suddenly it was a new book that came out after the movies. And then like Thanos was like the first seven issues or something. And you're like, oh, I never heard of this guy before. But
yeah, and that's a great,
big Marvel comic reader back then. But
that's a great reminder, everybody. If you are a huge Thanos fan, please join us on Saturdays for our Marvel chronology. Currently we're doing the Reading Order of Thanos. We're almost done with the classic era of Thanos. And we'll soon be starting the Infinity Gauntlet, whatever you want to call it. We're going to be starting that portion of Thanos history on the Reading Order. So we have, I think, three more issues of the classic era of Thanos, which it basically concludes in like 1980, I think. And then Thanos doesn't show up for a couple of years, and he shows up as it's hard to say in the death of Captain Marvel if it's truly Thanos or it's just like a hallucination by Captain Marvel that he's having. But he shows up there, and then he doesn't show up again till like 1990. So he goes eight years. We go, could you imagine Thanos now going for 8 years? That would be equivalent to the Joker not showing up in a Batman or a DC comic for 8 years. Would never happen. But yeah, Marvel put Thanos on the shelf for 8 years. And then Jim Starlin came back and told the first Infinity War. Well, Thanos Quest will be the first two books that we cover. And then we'll go into the Silver Surfer issues, classic Ron Lim, Silver Surfer issues, Ron Lim illustrated, Jim Starlin written, Silver Surfer issues from the 90s that lead up to that. That's kind of Thanos collecting the gems, as they were called back then. And that leads into Infinity War, which is the first miniseries, 6-issue miniseries, mostly illustrated by George Perez, but then he had some health issues and Ron Lim finished it. So yeah, if you're curious about sort of the Marvel comic version of Thanos and the gem, or I guess the stones as they're called in the MCU.
You can call them gems, yeah, if you're referring to that.
Yeah, like definitely.
The comics called them,
yeah, that. Definitely tune into our Marvel Reading Order because we'll be getting to that real soon. All right. Anything else that you're curious about future state or DC that you want me to?
No, I do have. I want your opinion on one thing really quick. That's Marvel.
All right. Shoot.
Spider-Man's new costume.
Hate it.
Is it just going to be like a way to get new readers for no reason?
I like have no idea why
it's not gonna be like Blue Superman where it sticks around for more than like
no it's definitely yeah months. Anybody yeah. anybody who thinks that this is a permanent change is a complete moron because
yeah. not, like, not even that long a change. I don't think I'd give it 4 to 5 months.
If I don't know it's all going to depend on how well it's received. I think it looks really, really dumb. I think it looks absolutely terrible. We don't know the in-story reason. As much as I like Nick Spencer as a writer, I feel he's overstayed on Spider-Man. I don't know. The problem I have with his Spider-Man is the pacing. It has been paced so slow. We just had issue 55 come out. Last week, 56 comes out in a couple days as we're recording this. 56 issues, and we're still telling the same story. We're still telling a story that we first saw Kindred in issue 1. And yeah, it was a subplot that ran for a long time, and I kind of like long-running subplots. But even if you just look at, okay, when have we been focusing on the Kindred story? It started in issue 47, and like nothing is there's whole issues that go by and nothing happens. It is just paced. So like, I never would have thought, well, somebody could write a comic that moves slower than Bendis, but apparently Nick Spencer has been doing his best to do so. And it's just, man. So either he needs to speed it up or we need somebody else on Amazing Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man hasn't been good for a while and it's disappointing. It's one of my favorite series, favorite characters. So
like, I don't mind when they update suits, like New 52 Batman looks more armory, but I think it's cheesy whenever you're like, oh, look, Spider-Man's wearing all new colors. And like, it has a purpose, like this is his tech suit, but like if it's a tech suit, it should still be his colors.
Unless it's a stealth suit,
but
the head looks so mechanical. It looks like a robot. It
looks like a tech suit. And Kyle's thought, he's like, why is he wearing Taskmaster's colors? I'm like, I think that's just a coincidence.
But yeah, that's just a different
color scheme.
I mean, that's the other thing, that we've only seen this one image. Because technically,
two covers or whatever, yeah.
Technically, Taskmaster's like yellow, blue, and orange. And this looks to me more like a yellow than an orange. So until we see it a few more times, but I mean I get what he's saying because I did think a little bit about Taskmaster when I saw it.
So did I. I didn't think there was an actual story purpose for it to be.
Yeah, and the other part is so that you know that we've only seen this one artist, Dustin Weaver, who I'm not a big fan of his work anyway. We've only seen his take on it. So, and he's one of those artists that likes to put the outline around his character, which I don't care for. And the outline is orange, but his costume's not actually orange. Or reddish. So yeah, it's hard to say. But mostly what I don't like is the fact that it's like a helmet. And why does he have like flashlight or flashbulb eyeballs? Like that doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah, I really, really don't like it. When you went from the red and blue costume to the black costume, that was a welcome change because the black costume is so sleek and interesting looking. And this is kind of the opposite of that. So,
or even like Superior Spider-Man was slightly different, but there was a purpose.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that different.
Where it's exactly.
Whole different color scheme.
This color scheme was the same. And I think there's a portion of people you could show it to and they wouldn't even realize that it had been changed. Yeah. It was subtle. But you can't, like, if you showed this new costume to people and said, who's this character? They might eventually guess is that Deadpool, Spider-Man?
Spider-Man.
Because only because he has the spider on him.
Yeah. Middle and he's web slinging in the pictures I've seen. Take away the web slinging and the logo.
Yeah.
No one's gonna know.
Yeah, they're gonna go, who? So yeah. So that's the reason we know it's not gonna last, because it doesn't look like Spider-Man. And Disney's not about to waste billions of dollars in IP. Think about all the Spider-Man merchandise that's out there with the red and blue costume, you know, all the rides at Disneyland and whatever, you know. So yeah, it's not going to stick. December, it's not going to stick. So. I don't know why they're doing it. And yeah, I think this costume design looks terrible. Don't like it at all. That's just
me. That was my only, even though it wasn't DC related, that was my only question.
All good. So, all right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of The Comic Source, everybody. We want to thank you for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.